कालस्यानुगतिर्यातु लक्ष्यतेऽन्वी बृहत्यपि यावत्यः कर्मगतयो यादृशीर्द्विजसत्तमा कालस्य ऑफ इटर्नल टाइम अनुगतिः बिगिनिंग यातु एस दे आर लक्ष्यते एक्सपीरियंस्ड अन्वी स्मॉल बृहति ग्रेट अपि इवन यवत्यः एस लॉन्ग एस कर्मगतयः इन टर्म्स ऑफ द वर्क परफॉर्म्ड यादृशी एस इट मे द्विजसत्तमा ओ प्यूरेस्ट ऑफ ऑल ब्राह्मणास ट्रांसलेशन ओ प्यूरेस्ट ऑफ द ब्राह्मणास प्लीज ऑल्सो एक्सप्लेन द कॉज ऑफ ऑल डिफरेंट ड्यूरेशंस ऑफ टाइम बोथ शॉर्ट एंड लॉन्ग एज वेल एज द बिगिनिंग ऑफ टाइम फॉलोइंग द कॉर्स ऑफ एक्शन देर इज नो परपोर्ट to this verse, so I will read the next verse with a nice purport. Yasmin karma samvayo yatha yeno bagrhyate gunanam guninam chaiva parinamam abhipsatam. Translation, then again kindly describe how the proportionate accumulation of the reactions resulting from the different modes of material nature act upon the desiring living being, promoting or degrading him among the different species of life, beginning from the demigods down to the most insignificant creatures. I'll read again the translation. Then again, kindly describe how the proportionate accumulation of the reactions resulting from the different modes of material nature act upon the desiring living being, promoting or degrading him among the different species of life, beginning from the demigods down to the most insignificant creatures. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The actions and reactions of all works in the material modes of nature, either in the minute form or in the gigantic form, are accumulated, and thus the result of such accumulated actions and reactions of karma or work become manifested in the same proportion. How such actions and reactions take place, what the different procedures are, and in what proportion they act are all subject matters of Maharaj Parikshit's inquiries from the great Brahmana Sukadeva Goswami. Life in the higher planets, known as the abodes of the denizens of heaven, is obtained not by the strength of spacecraft, as is now being contemplated by the inexperienced scientists, but by works done in the mode of goodness. Even on the very planet where we are now living, there are restrictions upon the entrance of foreigners into a country where the citizens are more prosperous. For example, the American government has many restrictions for the entrance of foreigners from less prosperous countries. The reason is that Americans do not wish to share their prosperity with any foreigners who has not qualified himself as a citizen of America. Similarly, the same mentality is prevailing in every other planet where there are more intelligent living beings residing. The higher planetary living conditions are all in the mode of goodness, and anyone desiring to enter the higher planets like the Moon, Sun and Venus must qualify thoroughly by activity in complete goodness. Maharaj Parikshit's inquiries are on the basis of proportionate actions of goodness which qualify one the planet to be promoted to the highest regions of the universe. Even on this planet of our present residence, one cannot achieve a good position within the social order without being qualified with proportionate good work. One cannot forcibly sit on the chair of a high court judge without being qualified for the post. Similarly, one cannot enter into the higher planetary systems without being qualified by good works in this life. Person addicted to the habits of passion and ignorance have no chance of entering the higher planetary systems simply by an electronic mechanism. According to the statement of the Bhagavad Gita 9:25, person trying to qualify themselves for promotion to the higher heavenly planets can go there. Similarly, persons trying for the Prithrilokas can go there. Similarly, persons trying to improve the conditions on this earth can also do that. And persons who are engaged in going back home, back to Godhead, can achieve that result. The various actions and reactions of work in the mode of goodness are generally known as the pious work with devotional service, culture of knowledge with devotional service, mystic power with devotional service, and at last, devotional service unmixed with any other varieties of goodness. This unmixed devotional service is transcendental and is called Parabhakti. It alone can promote a person to the transcendental kingdom of God. Such a transcendental kingdom is not a myth, but is as factual as the moon. One must have transcendental qualities to understand the kingdom of God and God Himself. We will be trying to describe a couple of verses, verse 13 and 14. Probably 13 without a purport. Very briefly, here in the 13th verse, Maharaj Parikshit is inquiring about time, both short and long. So these descriptions of time are given in the third canto. So as we know, there is time in its shorter period as Paramanukal, which is the time that takes for the sunrise to pass through an atom, Paramanu, through a Paramanu. So that is the shortest time. Then we know higher time, like the time of life of Brahma, the Kalpas, the days of Brahma, and shorter than that, Manvantara. So there are different descriptions of time in Srimad Bhagavatam, very nicely given in the third canto. So this question in the 13th verse as given here is prompting Shukadeva Goswami to speak further in the next canto. And the verse which we will be explaining more detail will be the 14th verse, which is describing the karma, which is one of the prime subject matters of Bhagavad Gita and our philosophy in general. We know the story of a priest, a Christian priest, who had his child with him, and he went to a marketplace where the kid was killed by some dacoits right in front of him. It's a very tragic, horrific scene. A kid is being murdered, own kid being murdered in front of his own eyes. Then this Christian priest came up with a conclusion because of lack of his knowledge. He analyzed the situation. He analyzed that if this has to happen and if there is a God, then there has to be something wrong with the God, because God has to be all knowledgeable, all powerful, and all merciful. So if he is all powerful, then how, and all these criteria satisfy, then how could this happen? Because he is all knowledgeable, he knows. And he knows, okay, he's all merciful, so he knows I have to show mercy to my devotee. And then to show that mercy, he has got all the power. So he concluded, he may be all merciful and he may be all knowledgeable. Maybe he is not all powerful, which is logical, if this premise is true. Second, he considered, he may be all knowledgeable and all powerful, but he is lacking in his mercy aspect. And on the third possibility, that is, He is all powerful and he is all merciful, but he is not all knowledgeable. So this is definitely a logical conclusion if one thinks that God is the only person causing all the actions and no one else is responsible. The only responsible person is God and no one else. And every individual has no other responsibility, but whatever happens bad is only because of God. So he came to a wrong conclusion and he lost the faith, which is tragic, and it happens in this world. We know when the 9/11 happened, we watched a video, I think in one of the farm retreats. It was interesting because one of the rabbi was speaking, because of ignorance, that if God is there, a rabbi, he was telling a Jewish priest, he was telling, how could this happen? I can't really understand why this happens when the all-merciful God is present. So even in the religious circles, apart from the Vedic conclusions, there is confusion in terms of understanding why things happen. Sometimes bad happens, sometimes good happens. It is very difficult to understand. And Krishna makes it very clear in Bhagavad Gita that to understand karma is very difficult. Karmanopiyahi abhi bodhavyam. Bodhavyam cha vikarmana. Akarmana cha bodhavyam gahana karmanagati. Gahana karmanagati. He says, one person, if you want to live in this world, one must know what is karma, what is akarma, and what is vikarma. However, he says, gahana karmanagati. That is, it is very complicated, very intricate, and it is very difficult to understand the workings of karma. And it is to the degree that people are completely unaware of the workings of karma. And it is a sole factor of our philosophy. Yes, our philosophy is very far, very vast, and it has so many aspects. But when we are dealing with the new people, karma, and it becomes a very important, very critical aspect in our preaching. So we can see, time and time again, we have lectures on karma when we speak to new people, because it is very, very essential to understand and to live in this world. Recently, I was speaking to a new bhakta who was coming to Melbourne Uni. Met him in Crossways. He was having prasadam every day in Crossways. So one day I sat with him. He said, look, I started reading Bhagavad Gita. He said, okay, Jai Jagannath, Choni, he said, you know, he gave Bhagavad Gita. And I started reading. And he was telling, you know, when I started reading, I can't stop it. So from that we understand, oh, it's a very potential candidate. If somebody cannot stop reading Bhagavad Gita, I mean, so, Hari Bol, we are very happy. Because rarely do we hear such things. No, we don't hear all the time. So maybe it took a while to hear someone saying, okay, it is so happy, you know, to hear, you know. Hearing, I'm now reading Bhagavad Gita and I can't stop it. I asked why. He said, I had so many questions about life, why things are happening in this way or the other way. So when I started reading Bhagavad Gita, I am getting answers to everything. And I totally agree with everything. So this is Bhagavad Gita. And you know, he's understanding philosophy of karma and further. So it is very encouraging to see new people when they read and, you know, they share their realization on one of the fundamental aspects of our philosophy, which is karma. And in this translation, very interestingly, it is mentioned the proportionate accumulation of reactions resulting from the different modes of material nature act upon the desiring living being. It's very interesting. Because according to one's actions in previous lives, not necessarily in this life, one is placed in a particular mode of material nature. Not necessarily one, a combination. So that combination is again very unique. One may be in a bit of goodness. He likes to think. He likes to, you know, he can be attentive without much difficulty. Some in passion. Some in tamogun. Very difficult. So these are the modes are acting upon them, which they are responsible because which they have accumulated from many, many lifetimes. Now they are associating with a particular mode, predominantly. It is like karanam gunasangosya sat asat yoni janmasu. Karanam is gunasanga. That is, to be in the material nature, the prime reason is association with the modes of material nature. And the reason why you are still staying in the material nature, that is also gunasanga. That is also according to one's work, and proportionately one is placed in a particular modes of material nature, and one is affected by these modes, and one is tend to act in a certain way. Even though one has a free will, still the influence of modes are so strong. One has the free will, still the modes are so strongly acting upon all. Even the desires are manufactured according to the modes. In which mode, what kind of desire can come? Because in goodness, one can think about liberation. So in passion, one can even think about living in this world. I want to make more money. I want to continue living in this world. Ignorance, practically, they may not have any positive ambitions. Sometimes quite negative. So the modes which are acting, that has such a strong influence on the conditioned souls. So conditioned means conditioned by the material modes. So this is the situation of us in the material world. And Srila Prabhupada mentions, okay, there are procedures of karma. The karma science in itself is very intricate. Probably we get a glimpse of karma, how it works, when we study Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, because the whole analysis is the different classifications based on Padma Purana. Aprartha phalam pavam kudam bijam bhalonmukham kramanyeva praliyeta vishnu bhakti ratatmanaha. So there is a sequence. Aprartha phalam. This is a glorious verse because it gives the sequence in which the reactions are gone away from our life. So it's a very positive verse. It's not just giving the analysis, but Vishnu bhakti, how it can remove different features of karma in what sequence. So that is very interesting. So that is the interesting verse. And Srila Prabhupada quotes this verse in Bhagavad Gita as well. So this verse says, it's from Padma Purana, says, Aprarabdha. First, if you do devotion service, what kind of karma goes away first? What is burnt at the first step? That is Aprarabdha karma. Aprarabdha karma means the karma which are destined for future lifetimes, not this lifetime. Whatever is this for, therefore, this lifetime, that is prarabdha. Prarabdha doesn't mean, you know, what is acting now, but whatever is meant for the whole life, that is prarabdha. So, aprarabdha goes first. So, the sinful reactions which are destined for the future lifetime, that is burnt into ashes in the first stage. Then, pabam kudam phalavanmukham. Then, of course, when we do devotion service, it is mentioned, and as soon as when we start devotion service, then the papam, the sinful activity in itself will go. If we actually take up to devotion service, then sinful reaction, sinful activity is gone. Because if we start following regulatory principles and engaging in bhakti means we are stopping sinful activities. Papam, then kutam. Kutam means the proclivity. So the third thing is proclivity. Kutam, the inclination to perform sinful activity, that is gone, that is burnt into ashes as the third level. Then finally is Bhalonmukham. Bhalonmukham means the prarabdha. The last one to go away is the suffering which we are going through. So there are two explanations, two things we can see in this regard. One is that when one actually surrenders unto the lotus feet of a spiritual master, then even though we are suffering in this material world to some degree, it is, or apparently looks like the karma is acting upon us, it is not exactly the same karma, because there is a hand of Krishna in it. Krishna is using karma to purify us. So if assume that when we start devotion service, all the karma, everything is gone completely, then what happens? Then technically, we should lose our body, because body is prarabdha karma. A subtle body, that is prarabdha karma. So means we have to straight away go to the Vaikuntha or Vrindavan. So it doesn't happen like that. Usually, what happens is, okay, the body is purified if we completely take up to devotion service, and body becomes an instrument in service of Krishna. In that way, it is spiritualized. And the so-called suffering, it is not just karma, but Krishna's tool to purify us. That is the reason Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto says in Brahma's prayers that tatena kampam susamikshamano bhunjana evaatma kritam vipagam hridva kvabhurphir vidathan namaste jiveteyo muktipade sadaya bhag. So then Brahma says tatena kampam. See this as anukampa. Anukampa means mercy. There are many words for mercy. We can see, you know, daya, prasad. This is anukampa. Anukampa means, okay, this is mercy of Krishna. It is a very difficult platform to attain. But this is the recommendation of Lord Brahma. Tatena kampam susamikshamano. When one is going through the material sufferings, which everyone has, no one is an exception. Bhunjana eva atmakritam vipakam. It's very interesting because bhunjana, bhojan, we know bhojan. What is bhojan? Bhojan means eating, or bhojan also, bhunjana also means enjoying. But in this regard, the same term is used in terms of suffering also. Bhunjana eva atmakritam vipakam. So it makes it very clear that atmakritam vipakam. So the whole problem, all the mess that we have created, it is we. Atmakritam. And bhunjana, one must eat or enjoy the suffering. Bhunjana eva atmakritam vipakam. Then what one must do? Hrit vak vabhurbhir vidadhan namaste. Hrit with the heart. Walk with the words, vapu with the body, one must serve Krishna. Then jivetayo muktipate sadaya bhag. Then liberation is his rightful claim. So if you want liberation, the muktipate, it means, ultimately muktipate means going to Krishna. It doesn't mean just liberation from the material existence or merging into Brahma Jyoti or anything. Muktipada means Krishna. Because who is the shelter of mukti? Krishna is the shelter of mukti. So muktipada is Krishna. So one can get Krishna if one tolerates and still continues devotional service. So in terms of karma, this is our message. That is, karma, as guided by Krishna, will act upon us. Srila Prabhupada gives a couple of examples. One is, he talks about the fan which is unplugged. So the karma has reduced, still there is. That is organized by Krishna. Second, Prabhupada says, a devotee should think that if our finger, there's a small cut on the finger, then devotee should think that actually the whole hand would have been chopped off. But by mercy of Krishna, it is reduced to a small portion. So this is how we see karma in our devotee life. Then Srila Prabhupada comments interestingly on how to go to the heavenly planets, to the higher planets. Prabhupada says, we cannot take shelter of the spacecrafts because the gross technological arrangements cannot take one to the higher planets. We have never seen people going to the higher planets and having a good time. Those who have gone, they have come back because they couldn't get any shelter. Srila Prabhupada made a point that if you go up and if you still come back, it means you haven't got the right shelter. If you get the shelter, you should stay there. That is actually, okay, if you go to higher planets, if you get the shelter, you must stay there. You won't come back. If you come back means you haven't got the shelter. It is applicable not only for a person trying to go to the heavenly planets, but also for an impersonalist who is trying to escape from the material clutches. Prabhupada says it is like a spacecraft. He goes high. You can go high, but he doesn't get the shelter of lotus feet of Krishna. Since there is no shelter, even though he thinks he is liberated, still comes back to the material world. Because he doesn't have respect for the lotus feet of Krishna, so there is no shelter. So this is a viewpoint of a jnani. He cannot get the shelter of Krishna. And what to speak about a gross materialist who is trying to go to heavenly planet where they are submerged in passion and ignorance. Heavenly planets are only meant for those who are in the mode of goodness. And the attempt in itself is in passion. So how can they reach the planet of goodness? It is impossible. They try hard, but it is impossible. So there is a whole propaganda that science knows everything. It's a propaganda. Dark matter, for instance, 90% is dark matter. don't know much about the matter. The matter in itself is unknown. How is it possible to know matter without Krishna? Because matter is only an energy of Krishna. So without properly understanding the source, how can you understand properly the creation in its completeness? Where the creation in itself is very vast, beyond the reach. There are so many paranormal experiences for the people regarding their, you know, astral existence, their subtle existence. People have experiences about, you know, UFOs. These are confirmed. But they don't come into the society. It doesn't come into the educational system, for example. It won't come. It won't come to the mainstream at all. The reason is, as far as there is no explanation, it is impossible to come to the mainstream because it will confuse people. And the if people are confused, people will ask questions to the scientists and also to the people who are ruling. And those who are ruling, the government, they don't want people to think too much. They want them to be addicted to, you know, television, intoxication, entertainment, and just be there. So this, they want passive citizens, not active citizens, passive. Active physically, but passive in terms of mental capacity to think something beyond matter. So that's why we have a generation, usually people don't ask such kind of questions. There are a few, of course, who ask these questions. Why are we suffering? Why there are different experiences which cannot be explained by the science? So these are actually right kind of people for us. When we are preaching, when we get, many times we see those who are very keen to hear our philosophy, they have these kind of questions. They want to think a little bit out from the box. Or as preachers, if somebody doesn't think, we have to inspire them to think so that we can give the right answers. So this is preaching. We have to try our best to give it to others. Then Srila Prabhupada in this purport moved towards what is the actual qualification to go to the higher planets. And Srimad Bhagavatam very elaborately describes the qualification to go to the higher planetary systems. The key, the essence of this teaching is that piety is must to go to higher planetary system. To maintain wealth, to maintain power, to maintain influence, not just over people in one planet, but, you know, to the whole, to the universe or different planets or even one planet in full, one needs something more than hard work and just physical ability or mental ability. One needs piety. This is the message of Bhagavatam in this regard. One must have piety to maintain all good qualities. Otherwise, cannot. There's a classic example to this, to show this Vedic principle. Because when Bali Maharaj, he got the position of Indra under the guidance of demoniac guru Shukracharya, immediately after getting this higher position, what was the next step of Bali Maharaj as ordained by Shukracharya? The next, the immediate step was he started performing Ashwamedha Yajnas. He started performing Yajnas. That was the next step, to accrue piety. Because by power and by mercy of his guru Shukracharya, he could get the position. He had piety, of course, but he could get the position of Indra. But to maintain, that wasn't enough. So Shukracharya advised, to maintain this position, you must perform yajnas. So this is intelligence. This is real intelligence. That even to maintain a position of goodness, having, practically speaking, he was controlling over different planets, still to maintain that, he had to perform yajna. And he did that. So actually, no one could defeat him in this, you know, by yajna or in any other process. Only the Lord had to interfere in the whole issue to maintain the balance of the universal affairs. And if one doesn't have the qualification, one cannot go to the heavenly planets. We know the example of Ravana. What did Ravana do? Prabhu was comprised in a Ravana mentality for the scientists, right? Ravana tried to make a ladder to the heavenly planet so that he can pull anyone, all the demons, and they can all go to the heavenly planet and have a good time there. Did it work? It didn't work. Similarly, the Ravana mentality of the modern scientist, it won't work. Because that is against the Vedic principles. Because the Vedic principles, these are laws. It has to work. It will work. It is working. So even if someone tries, it won't work. So it's just a waste of time. So Srila Prabhupada had so much of faith in Vedic literature that when one of the disciples left the movement, it was in the beginning time, and one of the disciples left the movement because the whole moon issue was going on. So other disciples told Srila Prabhupada that this particular devotee left because you say that one cannot go to moon, and now the scientists have gone to the moon. So, you know, he couldn't actually reconcile. It is contradictory, so he left. So Srila Prabhupada said, he can disbelieve my words, no problem. If I say, okay, no one has gone to moon, okay, fine. You, if he believes and he cannot accept, that's all right. But how can he deny the words of Vedas? Srila Prabhupada was speaking in his humility, showing how much faith he had in Vedas. It's a wonderful example. Similarly, we should also develop that kind of faith in Vedic literature. We know Trishanku. What happened to Trishanku? He was cursed because he kidnapped, or he took away a wife of a Brahmana, and he got cursed, and then he became a Chandala. And later, he got the mercy of Vishwamitra. For what? He wanted to go to the heavenly planet in his self-same human body. Vishwamitra said, by my yogic power, I'll help you. Just like the spacecraft and the ladder. Vishwamitra said, I will help you by your yogic ability. And he said, okay, Trishanku, you just go up. So he went up. He was almost reaching the heavenly planet. Then all the residents of heavenly planets, they pushed him down. Because they said, no, he's not qualified. He's just stinking. We don't want this stinking person with human body here. They pushed him down. So he started coming down. Then Trishanku was, you know, what's going on? He was falling. Then Vishwamitra, he became angry. He said, no, you must go up. So he again used his mystic power and he pushed him up. Then it was going on for some time. You know, he was vibrating. You know, he's going up and down, up and down, up and down. After some time, Trishanku became crazy. And then Vishwamitra said, I will help you. I will create another Swarga, which is a replica of the actual Swarga. In between, it's like Swarga, where you can reside. And it is mentioned in the scripture that he is still residing there. That is called Trishanku Swarga. So it's a, you know, as an example, you know, when we speak sometimes, says if somebody is, you know, in English, there is a, we use the term, you know, he's on the fence, you know, doesn't know, you know, where is he going, this side or the that side. In the same way, in the Vedic context, we say he's in Trishanku Swarga. You know, he's not neither there nor here, you know. So that is the situation of Trishanku. So Trishanku couldn't achieve it. He couldn't make it. So even with the yogic power, so what to speak about, you know, the spacecraft, waste of time, money, you know, so many things. Next, Srila Prabhupada explains a very interesting point. It is about mentality. It's a mentality, visa mentality, okay? Visa issues. Here Prabhupada takes an example of Americans, American government, how they imposed visa restrictions to certain people. And here we can see, we are all familiar with the visa issues here. You know, everyone wants visa and, you know, there are so many struggles, okay? So even devotees have gone through this kind of struggles. So Srila Prabhupada picks the very interesting mentality behind that. Prabhupada says, Americans, for example, or Australians, those who are citizens, we have prosperity. And this prosperity, they don't want to share with others unless they become a citizen. Unless and until they don't want to share. In the same way, Srila Prabhupada says, the residents of the higher planets, they are highly intelligent beings and they have prosperity in the mode of goodness. And they don't want to share unless and until one is qualified. Prabhupada says it's the same thing. And it's very interesting in Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a very vivid example that this mentality, you know, we don't want to give my position, the envy, it we can see in Bhagavatam example so nicely. We don't want to, I have this and I don't want anyone else to get the same thing. Indra is exemplifying this in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is very, very interesting how Indra is acting. Because Maharaj Prithu was performing Ashwamedha Yajna And who is Pratu? He is the Lord himself in the form of Shaktiavesh avatar. And he performed 99 horse sacrifices. And he was about to perform the 100th horse sacrifice. And Indra immediately became envy. Indra was, whoever performs horse sacrifice, in other words, whoever is becoming qualified, Indra wants to check that. And when the Supreme Lord himself, in his empowered incarnation, performed the sacrifice, he tried his best. What he did? First he came, no one saw, he just took the horse and he went away. And suddenly from the sacrificial arena, horse was missing. No one could see anything. Suddenly Atrimuni saw. He showed Maharaj Pruthu that, look, Indra is fleeing with the horse. You go, kill him and get the horse. Pruthu, he immediately left. You know, he went, he has all the power. He was chasing him. And this Indra was about to be caught. Immediately he changed his dress to that of a sannyasi, to a liberated person. Then Pruthu Maharaj thought, it's not appropriate for me to kill a saintly person. So he left and he came back. And at the same time, since Indra was afraid of the situation, he left the horse. So he got the horse and he came back. And all the sages addressed him as Vijitashva, because he gained the horse, he won the horse. So they called him Vijitashva. Vijita means won, Ashva is horse. Then what did Indra do? He didn't stop. This is envy. He didn't stop. He created a dark cloud, because he's the master of the cloud. He knows everything. You know, he can send cloud to Vrindavan, so he can send cloud anywhere. So he sent cloud to the sacrificial arena, and there was a whole darkness. In that darkness, he stole the horse again. Again, Atri found. He's running. Then Pruthu Maharaj chased him. This time, he was about to shoot the arrow. Then he turned himself into a form of a bhikshu, having a staff and a skull on top. And then Pruthu Maharaj, following dharma, thought, I shouldn't kill him. Then he didn't kill. He was about to shoot the arrow. He didn't kill him. And then sages told, it is inappropriate to kill Indra in the sacrifice, because only the sacrificial animal is supposed to be killed in a sacrifice. Otherwise, that would contaminate the sacrifice. So they had an alternate solution. They said, don't worry, we have some mantras which we haven't used before. We will use those mantras and we will bring Indra and we will throw him in the fire. So, you know, in that way, it's a proper technique of killing Indra. We are not actually using any weapon. You know, the proper technique. In fact, in terms of Yajna, it is very interesting, because in Yajna, there shouldn't be even a drop of blood should fall in any of the sacrificial arena, because that will spoil the whole sacrifice, and they have to start from the beginning. Regarding Rajasuya, we know the example, how Shishupal, he had his tactics. He wanted to spoil the whole sacrifice. So after the sacrifice was started, and after the Agra Puja was finished, and after Krishna was glorified as the chief of the whole sacrifice, then Shishupal opened his mouth. He started blaspheming Krishna. And then he knew, if something happens to me, then the whole sacrifice is ruined. That is envy. Even if I get killed, still it's okay, but the whole sacrifice must spoil. Then Krishna had his plan. He just used his Sudarshan Chakra. He was killed, and not even a drop of blood was fallen into the sacrificial arena. So that is Krishna's arrangement. Even we know, when Maharaj Parikshit was killed by Takshak, Janamejay performed a sacrifice. And what was his sacrifice for? Snake sacrifice, to kill all the snakes in the universe. And there also, again, he was not going with bow and arrow. The priests were there, they were chanting mantras, and one by one, all the snakes were falling in the sacrificial kund. One by one. It was scary. You know, then finally they were waiting for Takshak to fall. But okay, he took shelter of Indra, and you know, the whole story is there. So finally they decided, you know, he shouldn't be sacrificed, and Janamejay stopped the sacrifice. So here again, in terms of Pruthu Maharaja's sacrifice also, the priests were ready to kill Indra. Then Brahma interfered. He said, it is actually, the sacrifice is meant to satisfy the Supreme Lord along with the demigods. And even though Indra has acted in such a lowest manner, still he shouldn't be killed. That will spoil the whole attempt. And then the Lord appeared along with Indra, and Indra begged for forgiveness, and the whole situation was pacified. The here, one important point we have to understand, the envy of Indra. This envy of Indra was caused by fear of losing his position. Bhayam dhitiya abhinivesha tasyat. Because that is the second nature of material existence, whether in the earthly planet or in the heavenly planets. This fear, and because of fear, envy pervades everywhere. First, one consider oneself a competitor of Krishna. So we are in the material world. And then we consider everyone else our competitor. Everyone else is our competitor. No one else should get the position that we have. Or if someone else is gaining power, what we think, if someone else is gaining power, which is illusion, if we think someone else is gaining power, which is based on illusion, we think that others are gaining power because everything is material. There is no power as such. And then what we think, we may lose our position, which is again illusory. So we think because of that illusion, we are in illusion, we think because of that illusory power, we will lose our illusory position. So this is envy. So Indra was a victim of this. And in the material world, we are also victim of this. So there is a very nice instruction for us how we can see that this envy can create such a damage to ourselves. It is like a sharp object piercing into our heart. If somebody is gaining something and if we feel hurt by that out of envy, it is like a constant pain in our heart. Because definitely someone is going to gain something better than us. That is guaranteed. And each time one is paining. So that is such a deep-rooted bad quality that we have. So the process of devotion service, by glorifying Krishna, by serving devotees, that can slowly diminish. But we can definitely see quite a lot in our heart when we closely take a look. So these anarthas are creating trouble to our life. So it's a very interesting statement in this regard. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, "A person who never makes an effort to rid himself of anarthas will attain nothing but misfortune." It's a very strong statement. A person who never makes any effort to rid himself of anarthas will attain nothing but misfortune. He will not attain the mercy of the holy name. So, it can look a bit back and forth. I will explain further. Then, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains further how to remove this anarthas, how we have to make these attempts to remove anarthas from our heart. He says, without receiving the mercy of the name, one will be unable to remove his anarthas despite repeated attempts. Very strong point. Without getting the mercy of the holy name, one cannot get rid of anarthas from our heart. So the source of anartha nirvurti is the holy name of Krishna. Very key point. And then he gives a suggestion what to do. But if one cries sincerely at the lotus feet of the name, then within a few days all anarthas will vanish. So this is the realization of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He is exemplifying a sadhaka. He's actually a liberated soul, but in his life he acted as a sadhaka who is searching out different philosophies and finally coming to Krishna consciousness and progressing gradually from sadhaka to prema bhakta. So he is showing that, okay, by crying out to the holy name, one can remove anarthas. He says in a few days. If we can achieve in a few years, still it is a great accomplishment. That is our position. Then he says, after giving up anarthas, one should fully engage in hearing and chanting, taking complete shelter of the holy names. So very, very, very important instruction that we can learn from this. So I was hearing statement given by, excerpt from a lecture given by, I think, Prabodhananda Maharaj. I think Bhaktisar Prabhu was sharing with me regarding this crying aspect. So this crying shows how much sincere one should be in chanting the holy names. How can one cry sincerely if there is desperation? If one is desperate and one is feeling really humble, then one can cry. Otherwise, it's not possible to cry. It can be an internal cry. It doesn't mean that tears are flowing from the eyes, which can be on a higher stage. But at least internal craving is there to get free from the anarthas. So Prabodhananda Maharaj was making this point that his whole point was one should cry, one should learn to cry to chant while chanting. One should learn to cry to the holy name. And he gave an example of a girl after getting married going to her husband's place. So in the Indian traditional system, I think the example was from Orissa, right? From Orissa? Maharaj is from Orissa? Yeah, so he was giving the example. So their tradition, when the girl will be staying in parents' place for the, practically, till she get married. And getting married means going and staying in the husband's place. So it's a complete change. So it is customary that the girl would cry. So it is part of the tradition. The crying is there. It is part of the custom. It is there. Because it shows that she had so much of affection for her parents. And now she's leaving everyone and coming. So, you know, she's feeling separation from the whole family. So he was giving, okay, in the same way, we have to think, okay, we need to develop this crying mood towards the holy name. So we had to develop this craving that, okay, we need to get rid of this anartha so that we can perform devotion service in a better capacity. It is very crucial for us. So that is very interesting, and that comes to the last part of this purport. So Prabhupada is talking about the devotion service, which can actually burn all the karmas and also take us back to the spiritual world. So the translation says, everyone is affected by karma, beginning from the demigods down to the most insignificant creatures. So in the Brahma Samhita, there is a verse, right? Yastu Indra Gopam Athavendram Aho Sukarma Bandhani Rupam Phalabhajanam Athanoti Karmani Nirdahati Hinduna Bhakti Bhajam Govinda Madhipurusham Tamham Bhajami. So Brahma gives the example of Indra, Lord Indra, and Indra Gopa. Lord Indra is the king of the heaven, and Indra Gopa is the most insignificant insect, so small. Both are in the purview of karma. But the devotional service can burn that karma into ashes. Karmani nirdahadi kintu na bhakti bhaja. Those who are bhakti bhaja, those who are taken complete shelter of bhakti, then Govinda can burn that karma completely. So that is the potency of devotion service. And Srila Prabhupada gives the devotion service in different categories, which are, one is mixed with the fruity activities, one is mixed with knowledge, jnana, one is mixed with mysticism, and finally Srila Prabhupada presents Parabhakti. That is completely pure devotion service. And that bhakti has the ability to take us back home, back to Godhead. And burning of karma is only a side effect. So with this, I stop and see if there are any comments or questions.
Yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned that to reside in the heavenly planets is only afforded to those who exhibit the symptoms of goodness.
Yes.
And we see in the case of Indra, he's exhibiting symptoms of the mode of passion.
Yes.
Being envious of Maharaj Prithu.
Yeah.
So how do we reconcile those two apparently contradictory aspects?
Yeah. The reason is, material existence means a mix of modes. It is practically impossible to have one mode in its completeness. So there can be mix. And in terms of Indra, the heavenly abode is predominantly in the mode of goodness. doesn't mean there can be any mix of passion or ignorance. So here, Indra is showing, okay, he's mixed with a bit of passion, and that is causing trouble for himself. And so the sages concluded that by acting in this way, by demonstrating this character, Indra proved himself to be the lowest of the demigods. That's what the sages' conclusion, that because of, since everyone else is in mode of goodness, predominantly now Indra is affected by a lower mode, so he became the lowest among the demigods. So he, you don't have to kill him, by his own action he has lost his power. This was the conclusion of the sages and Brahma finally. So then he took shelter of Prudhu Maharaj and the Supreme Lord. So then he, you know, he must have gained his power back, and he must have placed himself in the mode of goodness predominantly. So there is of course a possibility of influence by other modes. It can be lesser if you go to higher planets. If you go to higher planets, even further than Swargaloka, it can be lesser, that possibility. Yeah.
So, is it the same Indra who stole the who attacked Vrindavan and
yeah, it looks like, because this is now Satyuga is running, correct? It's the second canto. The fourth canto. Fourth canto, the third canto, the creation finished, and then the Manus are explained. So Prithu is coming in that lineage. So it's pretty, very close to Manu. So it is really in the beginning of creation. So Indra for that, and the current, the Indra during Dwapara, it looks the same. Yeah.
So he's still the lowest of the demigods, even though he's got his Indra?
In the second stage or in the first example, looks like he got rectified because he got the mercy of Prudhu Maharaj as well as the Supreme Lord, because he still had access to the Supreme Lord and he took shelter of Vishnu, and then both of them came together. So Indra came along with Vishnu.
He's supposed to be the king of the demigods, so you would think rather than being the lowest, he would be the highest.
He is the highest, but he acted as the lowest because of the influence. And he must have reinstated, because he got the mercy of Prudhu Maharaj and the Supreme Lord. Yeah.
Yeah. It is said that the Masala with envy, you cannot read the scripture.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, I think I tried to mention that point, that in the spiritual world, if we try to compete with Krishna, then we are here. And in the material world, we are carrying forward the same mentality with all living beings. That is Matsara. Matsara means competition. So Nirmatsara means one who is non-envious. So that is the character of a devotee. Nirmatsaranam satam. Vedyam bhagavadam atra vasta shivadam tavatrayon mudanam. So it's glorifying Bhagavatam. That is, it is, you know, it is the life of Nirmatsara, of the devotees. The devotees relish Bhagavatam. So to the degree to which we are Nirmatsara, to that degree we can actually relish Bhagavatam. It's talking about the rasa of Bhagavatam. So we have access to that degree, we are pure in our consciousness. So ultimately Nirmatsara Anam Satam. Thank you. Yeah.
You mentioned with devotional service how we are nullifying our product of karmas.
Yeah.
And then the products are the last two.
Correct.
Yeah. And then we also know that with devotees, like, you know, how you give the example when there's a small cut in the nail, it's like we understand that the whole hand was going to chop off.
Mm.
So then, but that's prarabdha karma. So how Krishna, how do you reconcile the two?
Oh, that's the reason Krishna interferes in prarabdha. So that's the reason even the prarabdha for a devotee is not just prarabdha karma. Rather, it is the karma which is used by Krishna as a tool to purify us. So if he wants to reduce, he can reduce. If you want to give a little extra, that also he can do, depending on our purification. So Krishna's hand is there. That's so, there is a whole purport to that in the first canto of Bhagavatam, I think it's the fifth chapter, that A devotee is suffering even if he leaves Krishna consciousness, and that of a karmi, even though it looks same, it's not the same. Because Krishna's hand is there. Yeah.
Thank you, wonderful class. Remember in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to the effect that one who has this type of lifestyle, he can enjoy nectar within this life and, you know, get rid of all his miseries. Now, you spoke about freedom from anarthas.
Mm-hmm.
There Krishna is giving away a freedom from miseries.
Mm-hmm.
So, what would be the process of freedom from anarthas, apart from following the regulated process of devotional service? Because there is one regulation recommended in Bhagavad Gita which causes the freedom from miseries. And equivalent to that,
the conclusion of Bhagavatam is ultimate removal of anartha is only through bhakti. That is the Bhagavatam conclusion, right? Because you know how the karmakanda, how can purify the sinful reaction to some degree, and you know, it still doesn't completely clean the heart. Then the example of an elephant taking bath, kunjara shavachavat, you know, jnani can do all, you know, different examples are given where one could remove certain reactions by jnana process, but ultimate clearance of the heart is through bhakti. So the ultimate process is bhakti. So that is the Bhagavatam conclusion.
Exactly, that's my point.
Yeah.
When we're performing devotional life,
yeah,
anarthas are a part of our devotional life, so to speak.
Yeah.
Part of our, so continuing performing bhakti,
it'll go.
So, is it in the air? Like the statement you gave from Bhakti Vinod Thakur Mahashaya.
Yeah.
Like one who's not attempting to remove these anarthas. Now, is that in the action or?
I understood. Bhakti is not just a mechanical automatic process. When I'm doing 16 rounds, I'm doing it. That's it. I'm following 16, regulated points. I'm chanting 16 rounds. That's it. Chanting means we are trying to develop relation to Krishna. So it's not a mechanical process. And if we practice bhakti, we contemplate, we see what is there in our heart. What kind of thoughts are mind control? What is the meaning of mind control? It's a part of bhakti in the sense. When you do bhakti, we try to control our mind. It's part of chanting. We have to control the mind. So it's not mechanical. We have to control the mind means what kind of thoughts are coming to our mind. If it is not favorable to devotional service and if we are still lingering on it, then it's not actually properly performing bhakti. Bhakti, you know, we have to accept things are favorable and we have to reject things which are unfavorable. So, anukulese sangalpa, pratikulese varjanam. So, mind control, it is part of bhakti in that sense. Pratikulese varjanam. The thoughts which are, and the anarthas which are coming, we have to varjanam. We cannot act upon that. We cannot remove it. We cannot pluck it out. You know, like a fruit. Okay, this is, I had to just throw it out. May not be possible, but we had to take shelter of holy name and try not to act according to the pushings which we have. It's again, as we mentioned, it's the modes of nature, pushings from our previous conditioning. So that is our part. So it's not mechanical as such. We are putting effort in terms of not to act inappropriately. That is part of bhakti. That is part of sadhana. That is, we don't act inappropriately. That's part of sadhana. Is it okay?
You cannot push it.
Yes, Prabhu.
Not to discuss about how we the devotional taking, devotional submission, get rid of all the anarthas on the path.
Like, yeah.
Explain the proclamation that you mentioned, that the proclivity of sinful desire.
Yes. Yeah.
So once we take in shelter of the spiritual master, so still, that means we are in the devotional service, but still we get this proclivity or inclination towards sinful activities. So how do we consider that particular moment or particular thing that we still be able?
Depends on the shelter. Depends on the degree of shelter that we are taking. One is fully sheltered means one has a strength. Even unwanted things comes to the heart, one has a strength to cut it and perform devotional service. A sadhaka means that is sadhaka. That is actually, if one can do that, that's fine. There is, you know, that's sufficient. Continue sadhana while whatever from the past, let it come, but I'll continue my sadhana and I won't act upon it. Or I will not prolong that kind of thought. There is one thing, there is thought, and the thought can become desire. Thought is just like a replica, you know, there are so many impressions in our mind, there are thoughts, you know. This thought, when we identify with the thought, and then it becomes a desire. Okay, I need it, or I am that, or I feel, you know, everything. So depending on the identification, we can get out from the identification and just, you know, okay, it is there, yes, it's there, fine. But it's not me. I had to still do my chanting. Still I had to do my devotional service. We get the strength, that strength according to the surrender for that. We need strength, we need determination, it's not easy.
So this process of thoughts and perhaps migrating into desire and sinful activities.
Yeah.
So still could happen the person, in the life of a person, like the past state of the child, or the body name, and so on. So that's a continuation process.
Yeah, we had to try. We had to try. There can be failures, still we had to try. We had to try till we succeed. Because there is no alternate processes available at this point. This is the only thing. What can we do with our anathas? We can't do, we had to live with that, so we need the process, what can we do? Okay. Alright. Any final questions? Yes, ma'am. Question. It's a statement. Yeah.
Commenting.
Yeah.
You mentioned that people sight UFOs. UFOs.
Yeah.
Is there mention of them in the Vedic scriptures as to like where they come from, what's their purpose?
Oh, okay. Is there any mention of UFOs in the Vedic scriptures? There are, you know, generally I haven't heard the term UFO in Bhagavatam as such, but you know, there are different flying objects, meteors, or, you know, Dhumaketu. There are different mentions of different things like Dhumaketu and other things which are inauspicious omens, which are traveling, inauspicious objects which are traveling and, you know, coming to our sky and stuff like that. UFO, the term is not there as such, because according to Vedic literature, nothing is unidentified. Everything is identified. Everything has a meaning. So there cannot be as such, you know, a term UFO. But we know there are different planets. You know, we know there are different people living in different places. So, and they have different means of commutation. So it's not very difficult to understand such things' existence. Okay. Thank you very much.
When we are performing devotional service and we are getting these reactions, which are actually imposed upon other living entities by other living entities, how to actually understand that about that reactions?
When we get any reaction, it's again, Bhagavatam gives a very interesting point to this. In the first canto, when Dharma in the form of bull is being beaten by a Shudra dressed up like a king. That time, Maharaj Parikshit sees the whole scene and asks to talk to this bull. He's already beaten up, and you know. So the bull says that I cannot. Whoever is beating me, he's not the reason for my situation. He's not blaming one who is actually giving that particular pain. He's saying actually it is something beyond, because my past actions are causing through this instrument. So this is a very important. Then when Maharaj Parikshit heard this point, then he told the bull that you are not an ordinary bull. You must be Dharma personified. Otherwise, it's impossible to understand this intricate point. So if we are getting some kind of misery through some people, we have to understand it is through some people. They are not the cause of it. We are the cause. It's very difficult to accept that point. If we are in a difficult situation, we know that is our natural tendency to blame the immediate cause. So from our perspective, we have to see he may be an immediate cause, but the ultimate cause is us. So that's how we can understand.
So in that case, the friction Maharaj was trying to take action against a personified Hari. What is the reaction when we try to take the reaction opposing to this?
I explained the perspective of Dharma, and from the perspective of a king, it is king's duty to protect the bull, cow, everything. And a person who is dressed up as a king, he is violating all the rules. So it is the duty of a king to punish. So if Maharaj Parikshit if he didn't actually punish Kali, then that is a sinful act. Rather, Maharaj Parikshit was ready to kill. Then, since he surrendered, so he couldn't kill, because that is again the violation, so he didn't kill, rather gave certain places to reside.
What should be our action?
If something happens to us or to others? To us, we had to understand it's because of me. It doesn't mean that we have to be foolish. We are walking in the street and, you know, somebody is coming to beat us, you know, protect yourself, be intelligent. But at the same time, if we get some beating, we understand, okay, it's for my purification ultimately. What else can we think? But doesn't mean we had to, you know, we are getting beaten up and, you know, still you know, beat me more. You know, I deserve more. No, this body is to serve Krishna, so better protect that. Be intelligent in that respect. Thank you very much. Grantharashimal Bhagavatam ki Shri Prabhupada ki Jayanta Gaura Premandari.